We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Pelé leaned in and said something to Freddie.
Don't let them change you. Keep working on what makes you different and what makes you special. It was great advice, but it caused me some problems.
But what could change Freddie Adu?
Soccer is going to explode, and it's going to be around this kid.
We were the Beatles. Everywhere we went, it was the Freddie show.
And with that came the expectation, and with that came the pressure.
New episodes of American Prodigy drop Tuesdays from Blue Wire Podcasts.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by Indeed and betonline.ag. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike, and welcome to our general NBA Wednesdays, where we discuss the NBA at large or the Lakers in context of the NBA at large. And we're going to be doing the latter in today's show. And so, Mike, what do we have in store for today?
So there was a concept last year that the three of us, I always reference our group text chain, and that's kind of part of the point of the pod now, right, is to bring everybody in on that. And one of the things that was starting to bug me, and not as somebody that covers the Lakers, but as sort of an NBA, I'm always obsessed with fairness and the way that people talk about things being accurate, probably to a fault. And this whole concept was that the Lakers were the two stars, and then they didn't really have anybody else. You know, oh, if you look at the rest of the roster, you know, I don't know. I just don't buy that. And I think the three of us, especially watching, and many Laker fans watching the Lakers super closely, were like, well, hold on. You're not realizing how well a lot of these guys are playing and just how good they are in general. And that was Danny Green and KCP, Caruso, like on down the list. Rondo, of course, surprised us in the playoffs. Dwight was really good all year, but like that, you could call it a 3-8, or if you want to go 3-10. And I thought that people were starting to kind of recognize that as the playoffs went on, but I don't think really did. I think it was still more about LeBron and AD. They kind of got the credit, and the rest of the guys were just sort of there. So heading into this season, Rob Pelinka and the rest of the staff make the moves. They get Harrell, they get Schroeder, then they get Gasol, they get Matthews, and you're starting to hear some more respect because those are, you know, because of where they finished in six man ratings or because Gasol's got a title, whatever. But I heard a quote. I was listening to a pod with Nate Duncan and John Hollinger, and Hollinger had a quote, and I don't mean to cherry pick this because I've gotten cherry picked quotes wise as well. In fact, there was the whole thing last year when I said Caruso was better than Lou Williams, which, by the way, certainly.
Oh, you weren't wrong about?
And but like I saw that come up on my Twitter feed more times than I needed to. So
I'm going to retweet it now, Mike. I'm going to go right now. Just give me a second.
So what I'm not trying to turn this into a, okay, that I'm mentioning Hollinger in this specific quote, but I thought what it would be great to unpack. And I thought it would be great for the two of you guys to sort of check. And so I sent you, what I basically did was make rankings, initial rankings on the Western rosters outside of the top two players. Now, are you with me? Okay.
Uh-huh. Yes. 100%. Okay. I used to do this in high school, actually, when I was supposed to be paying attention in class, I'd make lists exactly like this. So this is my jam.
You know what I was doing in high school? I would get the paper, and whatever the first break was, would go through and tally up our fantasy basketball scores from the box scores.
When you had to do it manually? Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. So you kids out there, okay? We didn't have any websites that we could go to. Okay.
There wasn't an app on your phone.
ESPN.com didn't even have the websites in order to put out box scores yet. So that was how we did it. And I remember I had Hakeem and Scottie Pippen the same year, one year. And the weird thing was that Pippen actually had better fantasy numbers than Jordan, because Pippen would, because you got 2 points for steals, blocks, you know, assists, rebounds. Jordan was scoring more. Anyway, I digress. Okay. Here's the Hollinger quote. Quote, when I look at the third, fourth, fifth best players on these teams they're competing with, and they being the Lakers, they're all way better than what LA has. What LA has that nobody can match is the best 1-2 combo in the league by far. And that, I think, allows them to punch way above their weight in a postseason environment when they both play 40 plus minutes at their max. But to rack up regular season wins in a compressed schedule, they don't really have the roster for that. So after I heard that, I immediately texted the two of you, and I think it was probably 1 a.m. So I think I got the...
it was. I woke up to that. I was like, wow, Mike is feeling it.
Yeah. And I just said it because I thought it would be a good talking point. So just to make sure that I'm not talking for the entire time, here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to give you... let's start at the top, just because I think I personally have the Lakers actually as first in terms of talent from 3 through 8 in the roster. But first, Darius, can you hit me with the nuance of sort of you can't separate the 3 through 8/10 from the 1 and the 2 in real basketball. So that is part of it. And LeBron and AD certainly do complement and make all these guys better. But we're going to try to dissect them sans those two. But I want you to be able to weigh in and sort of talk about how this stuff is integrated as well.
Yeah. And this is a conversation that Pete and I have had on the pod, and as well as offline, when we sort of look around the league and talk about, hey, what do you think about this player or that player? Because Pete and I like to play armchair GM as well behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of Anthony Davis and LeBron, and this came up in my little speech that you guys want to play for the team at some point, but the idea of LeBron and AD being such versatile players and the ability to surround them with pretty much any type of talent, and LeBron and AD are going to be able to shift around within the context of their very wide skill sets and allow those other players to flourish. Right. And so it's difficult to take any role player out of the context of the team that they play on, A, because of the system, but B, because of the surrounding talent. So LeBron and AD are both amazing ceiling raisers, right, Pete? But they're also amazing floor raisers as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are the elite of the elite of the elite when you're talking about superstar talents, because any player that you slot next to them suddenly is better. So the type of three-point shot that you get on a swing pass out of a LeBron post-up is going to just be more open than what it is versus a lesser talented player. And the types of dump-off passes that a big man is going to get for an easy shot around the basket, those are going to be more wide open and less contested and less challenged because of the defensive attention that LeBron and AD draw as individual offensive talents. And the same can be true of the defensive side of the ball, right, Pete? Like the idea of LeBron and AD being able to really defend from the paint and protect the rim all the way out to the three-point line and switch and trap and be a secondary help defender. They could cover up a lot of the weaknesses of their teammates in ways that lesser superstar players even cannot. And that makes the players around you better. And that's like one of the core definitions of what a superstar player is supposed to do.
Yeah, the hiding weaknesses is really the crux of this. I just want to say up front that I think that that quote is insane and the premise is absurd. And it speaks to the idea of, like, maybe last year, if you looked at the rosters and had it on an Excel spreadsheet and had the Lakers' third best player versus this other team's third best player at that point, right? Like, maybe you can make that argument. But about this team's roster, I don't even agree with the premise in the first place. But You cannot separate from LeBron and AD for the reasons that you pointed out, because it hides weaknesses. And I always like to say, blessed are the shot creators, right? And that you can get somebody, give the ball to somebody who can get their own and or create for somebody else. And the more that they're able to do both, the more blessed they are, right? So, and we've got none other than LeBron James, who's capable of averaging, what did he average in the finals? 30-something on almost 60% from the field. And he's one of the greatest passers of all time, right? And so what that does for your 3-8 is those guys don't have to do the things they're not good at. They get to, by and large, only do the things that they are good at. And that translates to the defensive end as well, but even more so on the offensive end, where you kind of dictate the terms of a possession. And so that, it's just, if you look at it on an Excel spreadsheet, then maybe you could have made that argument last year. I think it's absurd even this year, even on those parameters. But in context, you just can't pull 3-8 or 3-10 out of 1 and 2.
Yeah, and there are a couple different arguments there. And just so that I don't go back to last year and do that whole thing again, because I think the Lakers proved pretty well that they had plenty of good role players who couldn't be taken, who sort of, you didn't have to worry about, oh, we got to get that guy off the floor. And that's part of how I built this exercise, is that I think the Lakers this year, they go 11 deep with players who, in a playoff game, you would be comfortable with them on the floor. And that is not common. It's not common. So I really do think that they go that deep. And this is, again, this is why we sort of, I sort of cherry picked this one Hollinger quote from the piece, because to go back to it again, but to rack up regular season wins and a compressed schedule, they really don't have the roster for that. And that was the point. I was like, okay, so just to entertain this, of course, I know that I don't think that it's anywhere near true. Let me actually literally look at each of the rosters in the West. And I don't think that there are a couple Eastern rosters that are certainly deep, but none that are, you know, that are better per se. So here's how we're going to do this. I'm going to just give you my and we don't have to list every single player, but it might be helpful for the exercise. And just so we know with the Lakers, I'm generally going to be able to, I'm going to put them in some rough order. Now, when I say like Marc Gasol before KCP, that doesn't mean that I'm declaring him for sure better, but it's somewhat in that order. So here's what the Lakers go from their 3-10. Marc Gasol, KCP, Caruso, Schroeder, Harrell, Kuz, Wesley Matthews, Markieff Morris, THT. Now, I couldn't leave any one of those guys off, because again, I could see those guys starting, any of those guys starting a game, and any of those guys finishing a game. And the one guy that maybe wasn't in that initial conversation was THT, but he is now. We covered that in the last pod, by the way, if you want to go back and get to that. Now, the team that I have second is the Clippers. And let's just, here's that roster, and let's just start right there, right? And Lakers, Clippers, and then maybe there's another team that you guys think is better than the Lakers, or at least closer, and we'll get to that. But Clippers. So you go Serge Ibaka, Marcus Morris, Patrick Beverley, Zoo, Luke Kennard, Lou Williams, and Patrick Patterson. Now, most of those guys, I think you can absolutely have in a playoff game. And start. I don't know if Luke Kennard is starting or finishing a playoff game. We have to kind of see. Lou Will got played off the floor in the postseason and historically has. He's a 39% historical for his career field goal percentage shooter. And that's his good side of the ball in the playoffs. And then Patrick Patterson, I'm not sure if you want him on the floor, but he's not going to kill you. So just right there, Darius, who do you think is better for this season? How close do you think it is? And do you agree that that would be the team you would have second, or if, and that's assuming that you have the Lakers first.
So I probably do have the Lakers first. One of the things I would say with this too, Mike, is the way that you rank these likely relate even more to playoff outcomes, right? And to be fair to Hollinger, one of the points that he was making was talking about regular season wins. So I will pivot to that point to talk about the Lakers really quickly. Is Harrell and Schroeder were six man of the year candidates last year. Schroeder was a key contributor on a team that vastly overachieved in terms of what their preseason expectations were. And they were the fifth seed in the playoffs last year. And he was a big reason for that. Harrell was a key contributor. He won the Sixth Man of the Year award, and he was a key closing lineup player on the team that was presumed to win the NBA championship last season, the Los Angeles Clippers. And so stand alone as talents, those guys are probably two of the better 3 through 8 players you're going to find in the entire league. And so their acquisitions to add them to championship level role players like a Marc Gasol, who did not win last year's championship, but won the championship just the year before that as a key contributor and one of the Raptors' best defensive players and one of the best defensive players in the league when you talk about defensive plus minus numbers and individual defensive rating. And then you have guys like KCP and Caruso. Wes Matthews was a starting player on the Milwaukee Bucks, who were the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. So these are all high quality players, role players that you trust to contribute towards wins, right? Towards actual regular season wins.
Darius, Montrezl Harrell was supposed to be one of the reasons the Clippers were supposed to win the championship last season. He was like, the argument was that Paul George and Kawhi Leonard joined this 48-win team that was led by Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. They were the headliners of that team. And they were supposed to be, that combination was supposed to make them the favorites. So that right there, Trez at worst was a top four guy, or at least regarded as such prior to last season. Where does Schroeder rank on OKC's players last year? A 5-seed playoff team, a mid-level playoff team. He's at worst, what, their fourth best player?
Yeah, at worst.
Yeah, second or third. Yeah, I mean, you know, Shea was really good in the regular season. And then, of course, Steven Adams is pretty consistent. But in crunch time, it was like CP and then Schroeder.
Right, you know? Man. So you can make a good argument for he was their second best player, especially when in the games that matter. And so we get those guys. You said Wes Matthews, Marc Gasol, both guys. Mark was maybe the fifth best guy on Toronto. Wes is, you know, 5 to 6, 7, somewhere in there for Milwaukee. These are high end teams. These are teams that got past the first round. But all of a sudden they joined the Lakers. Joining the guys that were all our key guys, Rondo left and Dwight left, right? But we still got KCP, who was probably our third best player in that title run. We've still got Alex Caruso. We still got Kuz. We still got Keefe, right? Like, this argument's insane to me. And I'm sorry, I'm so bothered by it, but it's like, how does that work? These were guys on other teams. They were on the teams that you were saying were better 3 through 8 than we are.
Yeah.
And they were in the 3 through 5, and now they're on the Lakers, and now we don't have the, come on.
And that's why we're having this conversation, because again, last year, while I disagreed and I thought that the outlook, and again, this is because sort of what Darius just said, what I really value is two-way players that are helping you win. And as opposed to a six-man scorer that's coming in, and if you give him the ball, he can put up some points. That's been happening for years. The Jamal Crawfords, the Lou Williams. You know, to me, that player is much less valuable in a postseason context than a player like Danny Green or KCP or Caruso, you know, or even Kuz, who's playing you two ways. And you can't pick on with the superstar who's going to have the ball anyway. And so that's where. So, but even past that point, then. To consider kind of like the Clippers roster this year, it's still a good deep team for sure. Yeah. And I think that's why we had them ranked second, but they're not. So there's no way you can argue that group is clearly better than the Lakers group from this year. If you want to argue that you like them a little bit better because of this, this, and this, okay, we can have that debate. But my point is, even the team that I have second is on this list is not objectively, I guess it's hard to say objectively, right? Is not subjectively better. So let me bring in the third team, which I think this year I could be persuaded that it's either Portland, Denver, or Dallas. And I'm curious who you guys have, but I gave Portland a slight edge. I really like Nurkic. Covington, I think, gives them what they need on the wing. Derek Jones Jr., same thing. All of a sudden, they're long and they're rangy and they're athletic at those spots again. I really like Gary Trent. Rodney Hood's coming off an injury, but has a chance to be a decent bench player. Zach Collins, if he can get healthy, can be a plus player. And then you got Cantor and Melo. Melo and Cantor, you probably can't have on the floor in certain situations. The rest of those guys, you probably can. So that grouping right there, do you guys, is that, do you have one of those other teams that I mentioned above them and on the same tier as the Lakers and Clippers?
In looking through the list, and I wish you guys could see my screen right now because I've got Mike and Pete, we're video chatting. I've got them on one side, and then I've got this wonderfully put together email that Mike sent with all of these players just listed out, and it's perfect. And looking
it's
at
basically
Mike's,
a depth chart, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but look, this is nicely typed. I like the font. It's wonderful, Mike. Beautiful.
You know, hey, I try.
I look at Utah as being a team that could challenge some of these other squads.
Yeah, that's fair. They should be in that mix.
I'm still a big fan of, I know he's slowing down. I know that he's older. I still like Mike Conley. I really like Bogdanovich. I think getting Favors back was, just in terms of a talent and how he can help them as a backup big and play some next to Gobert. Those are tricky lineups, but I like Favors. I like Joe Ingles. I think that he's a winning player. He's one of those two-way players, Mike, that I think stands up in a playoff series that doesn't take a bunch off of the table, if anything, on both sides of the floor. What his top level is below some other guys that I would rank ahead of him, but I like him. I like Royce O'Neal. I think Jordan Clarkson is in that same sort of mold that you discussed earlier as like a Lou Williams type, but I actually like him better defensively than Lou, even if his top end as a scorer is not where Lou Williams is. So I might put Utah in that mix a little bit more. Am I off base there?
No, that's fair. And here, let me do this, Pete. I'm going to give you the Denver and Dallas sort of 3-8/10 and then weigh in there. So Denver, they're coming at you. So it's Gary Harris, Michael Porter Jr., Monte Morris, Will Barton, Paul Millsap, Jermichael Green, PJ Dozier, and potentially Bol Bol as that kind of X factor. Dallas, Josh Richardson, of course, he comes over in the trade for Seth Curry, Tim Hardaway Jr., a couple guys that I think are underrated, Maxi Kleber and Dorian Finney-Smith, two-way role players, tough, solid. Then Jalen Brunson, Dwight Powell, and James Johnson, who they get from the Timberwolves. Darius just mentioned Utah's rotation. I was tempted to include Houston just because I love PJ Tucker. Christian Wood, I think, is interesting. You know, Gordon isn't great for the money, but can still be a good two-way impact player. Boogie looked good in his preseason debut. And then they got kind of like McLemore, Sterling Brown, but I'd put them probably just below that tier. So Pete, we've now gone through Portland, Denver, Dallas, Utah. Darius mentioned Utah specifically. Is there a group that stands out to you that you like in that group?
So I think Denver has the second best 3-8 in the West, even ahead of the Clippers. I do. What I look for with those 3-8 groups is I think that there are two things that matter. I think it's specialists and defense. Like if there was an offense defense, how much matters? I'd say like 75% defense versus 25% offense, because your one and two are going to be responsible for the shot creation in the majority of times. So one of the reasons I don't like Portland as much is because of they've got a lot of guys who are either non-defenders or they have a major hole, specifically at the five, in terms of being able to defend the perimeter. We saw the Lakers exploit that in the first round series. So Nurkic is not a bad defender, but if he has to go out onto the perimeter, right? Same is true with Enes Kanter, either on the interior or on the perimeter. Carmelo Anthony, right, is not going to give you a ton on the defensive end. And so the reason I think defense is more important than offense amongst this particular part of a roster is because you can give the ball to LeBron or Anthony Davis on every play, but on the defensive end, the offense will find your weak link. That's part of the reason why the Lou Williamses of the world end up getting played off of the floor. So you got to be able to stay on the court in most circumstances. To me, Denver's there, while they've got a couple of guys that certainly have holes in that respect. Like, I like Monty Morris as a two-way guy, Gary Harris as a two-way guy, even Paul Millsap at his age. Will Barton's a specialist as a scorer and can and does provide some defensive ability as well. I also like the upside of MPJ and Bol Bol in terms of like what they could be in even as soon as this year, right? So that plus PJ Dozier's athleticism, I think you've got a lot of the ingredients I look for. So I think they're better than the Clippers.
The point to make here too, Pete, I think is there star potential or a third star, right? And so the premise of this was take away your two best players, right? And so Michael Porter Jr., he has real star potential, which is not something that you would necessarily say about any of the players that we've talked about so far, either on the Lakers or the Clippers, all respect due to Talen Horton Tucker. So,
well, he's not a prospective star. He's clearly already a star. So
he's already
sure. Yeah. And Alex Caruso's already the GOAT too, right? So let's take those guys out of our conversation. Yeah. But that idea of Porter Jr. potentially making the leap, if not this upcoming season, that then in the next 18 months, potentially, of being a guy who can be a foundational type of player similar to a Jamal Murray, not necessarily to a Nikola Jokic, right? Who I think is like a top 10 guy. But could Porter Jr. in two seasons be a top 30 player, right? So potentially be the best player on one of the NBA's 30 teams. Sure, he could, right? Like you could put him on Charlotte or the Knicks or one of those teams that does not have a top end guy right now. And maybe he's their best guy already, right? So that's another point, I think, Pete, that works in your favor in terms of your argument for the Nuggets.
Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, Mike, I want to hear from you about Dallas and then just this whole group in general.
Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria. You can contact them the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier. Like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it, and fast. Try Indeed out with our $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offers valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply. The wait is finally over and football is back. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
So yeah, Mike, before we went to break, you were about to jump in on that. What do you think in that like star potential and that angle?
Well, this was part of the interesting exercise, right? And going through all these rosters as well, because again, going back to the original quote, it was basically, you know, when I look at the third, fourth, fifth best players on the other teams they're competing with, they're all way better than what LA has. And so we just listed some of the third, fourth, fifth best players. So it's Ibaka, Morris, Beverly, it's Nurkic, Covington, Jones, it's Harris, Porter Jr., Morris, it's Richardson, Hardaway, Kleber, it's Conley, Bogdanovich, Favors, right? Tucker, Wood, Gordon, going down to some other teams we haven't gotten to yet. Lonzo Ball, Bledsoe, Steven Adams, you know, DeAndre Ayton, Jay Crowder, Mikal Bridges. So these are all solid players, but there isn't a group of three there that I would necessarily rank ahead of. Take your pick. Is it Gasol, Schroeder, and Harrell? Is it KCP, Caruso, and Harrell? Does Kuz get in there? So they're whatever way you want to even just take the three through six, I think that these guys are relatively comparable, and it speaks to how LA has this advantage again and why they're the favorite, because what we'll get to later in the pod, we'll just quickly go through the top twos, and the separation from LeBron and AD to everybody else is quite wide. And so therefore you would need a massive, massive upgrade from three through eight or 10 to bridge that gap. And even so, we know that the players who have the ball in the NBA and who can defend, that makes a bigger difference than in other sports, right? Like in baseball, where you're playing on your own island. So that's all part of it. But let me, Darius and Pete, let me throw out a couple of these other depth charts here and get into this kind of next tier. And we'll go through these a little bit more quickly, because I don't think we're going to have an argument that they're necessarily better than the Lakers. Okay. Houston's already mentioned. So let's go to New Orleans. So it's Lonzo, Bledsoe, Steven Adams, Redick, Hart, Jackson Hayes, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and Kyra Lewis. And they've got a couple other young guys too that could pop. And like that's actually some nice depth of talent there. Some good young guys. And I think that if Zion looks like he did in the preseason opener, you know, they could become interesting. Then Memphis, kind of like this team too. Jonas Valanciunas, who is better than people think. Brandon Clark, Dylan Brooks, Kyle Anderson, De'Anthony Melton, Justice Winslow, Tyus Jones. Tough. Kind of no-nonsense players that complement their two young stars there. Phoenix, DeAndre Ayton, Jay Crowder, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Cam Payne, Etuan Moore, Dario Saric, and Javon Carter. So this speaks, I think, guys, to the depth of the West, that we're still naming players on these rotations that, you know, there's no guy there that you're incredibly worried about leaving out on the floor. But how about from that group, Darius, let's start with you. What do you think, there's an ascendant situation there from one of those teams that has a chance to pick their team up?
Oh man, like I really like that Pelicans group, to tell you the truth. That's some good two-way talent, hardworking guys. To speak to Pete's point earlier about specialists, right? Like either two-way players or specialists. Is there a better shooter in the league than JJ Redick, right? Like there's guys who are probably there are probably a couple of guys who you would take above him, maybe like a Duncan Robinson, Klay Thompson, right? Like Steph. Right? But in terms of role player guys, Redick's at like right at the top, and he's in that conversation of being at least the most trusted guys. I like Bledsoe. His playoff stuff is well known at this point, but he's a tough two-way guard. My love for Lonzo still runs deep, guys. Like, just like my love for Josh Hart and the dinner provider, Brandon Ingram. right? So all those former Lakers, I love those guys.
All my sons, my former sons.
Yes. And then obviously too, right? Like, I'm expecting a big year from DeAndre Ayton too, just as like a former number one pick that like we haven't really talked about. He's like the first guy that pops to me as like when you talk about emerging. I think Ayton's a guy who's really going to take a massive step forward this year with Chris Paul on this roster, which goes back to some of the points we were making early in the pod, right? About how it's hard to disentangle these role players from the stars who are going to be helping them. And Ayton, I think, is going to benefit a ton playing next to Chris Paul and getting opportunities out of the pick and roll with him and just as a rim runner and a guy like that. So Pete, is from your perspective, are there groups of guys or any individual players or duos that you would highlight from this as being like, oh man, like those are, I really like them.
I really like Memphis. I think Memphis has a top four, three through eight in the West. They just don't have their one and two guys at this point with Ja and Jaren Jackson Jr., right? They're not, but those young group they play a great deal of defense. They're very athletic. They get out in transition. And especially for their age, you got a bunch of phenomenal passers. I love Brandon Clark. Yeah. You got D'Anthony Melton is a great second round guy who defends his ass off. Kyle Anderson, slow-mo, right? You've got passing there. And Tyus Jones is another really crafty guy. They're a really good 3-8. They just don't have the top guys to kind of, and that they're kind of the other end of the example of how important those top two guys are, right? Which is no disrespect to Ja or JJJ, of course. It's just they're young. I think very highly of them.
That's no, Pete. I as I mentioned, I like them, but I couldn't put them above, you know, Clippers, Blazers, Nuggets, Jazz, Mavs. I think they're right there for maybe that. Let's see. So what would that put them like seventh? And I think Ja's going to take another leap this year, man.
Sure. But okay, maybe
split the difference though, and like split the difference.
So maybe fifth, like I'll agree with you on the Clippers, Denver, no doubt. I'm like, on Portland, I really don't like that 3-8 for Portland that much. Like I like a couple of the guys, but in totality, I it's close. I'll go with you on that with Portland, but I'd put Memphis fifth.
A part of this is like young guys versus veterans too, right? And like, who do you trust versus who is emerging and still sort of has to prove it a little bit more. So I think from an upside potential perspective and from a like, oh, these guys showed me something last season and I expect them to improve and grow even more. I'm right with you there, Pete, with Memphis. But I'm also with Mike in that some of these other rosters with these veteran guys who year in and year out have produced at like above replacement level on good teams, right? Like when I look at a Utah, like a Favors or a Bogdanovich or a Mike Conley, some of that is, all right, well, come and take it from those guys too, right? And that's not saying the young guys can't or won't, but let me see it over the course of a 72-game season or an 82-game season, right?
Memphis is an example to me of that 75-25 favoring defense. There isn't a bad defender in that bunch. There are a couple guys you could argue are average or maybe a little bit below average. But for a bench group, a 3-8 or a 3-10, those are really solid. Yeah. And they will defend. They'll get out on the run. They can pass out of the ball. So that's I'm high on Memphis. I also agree with you, Darius, on New Orleans. I think they're going to make the playoffs, and I don't think they're going to be an 8 seed.
All right. So, really? You got them in the playoffs. That's okay. That's interesting too. We'll have to have a whole next week's pod. We'll have our like official rankings of that, because that will be, will that still be before? Yeah, that'll be just before the regular season starts. Or actually, wait, regular season starts in a week.
No, season starts on
Tuesday.
Season starts that night.
Yeah, Tuesday. So maybe Mike. Yeah. Damn. So maybe for Sunday night. Let's get through the last few rosters here. And I do want to underscore Darius's point though about Ayton, because he is the guy out of this group that has that sort of the potential, you know, the skill, the athleticism, the size, all that to pop more into a potential all-star type candidate. And I think that, you know, more so than, and that could take the whole 3-8 up. If you have a guy who can pop to that degree, then that makes it even that much more easy on the rest of the roster. So I do think that's important to mention. Now,
yeah, it's like the Porter Jr. point, right? Yeah, like he's another guy sits in that tier of individual prospect that can lift up a group,
right?
For sure.
And I don't think there's somebody on the Clippers roster that's going to pop to that degree as an all-star. I don't see somebody for this season on Portland as popping that much. I agree that it would be Porter, although he's maybe a year away. Same thing with Dallas. That's just another group of kind of like what Pete just said, solid guys to play defense, guys that aren't going to hurt you, whether it's Richardson, Hardaway, Kleber, Finney Smith, right? Those guys aren't going to pop to all-stars, but they're going to be nice role players around Luka. And then, Conley at this stage, right? He's past that point. New Orleans, I'm still not giving up on Lonzo as one day, but he's got to get his shot together for this season. And then Memphis, I mean, is there a guy that pops as an all-star? Probably not. Maybe Clark has the best chance in a few years, but I doubt it. Phoenix,
he doesn't really have the balls on ball skills.
I really like Mikal Bridges. I thought he was really good last year as a two-way guy. He's got the potential to get better. And now we get to the final five teams here. And Golden State, this to me sort of, if you were excited about Golden State coming back, it all changed so much with Klay's injury, right? And this is part of the reason why. They would have had, it would have been probably Draymond, right? But either Klay or Draymond to lead this pack and maybe be the best, third best player in the West. And now it's probably Kelly Oubre, you know? I think Oubre might be a little better than Wiggins. We'll see about Wiseman. And then the rest of the guys are just straight role players, right? Bazemore, Wanamaker, Jordan Poole. You know, we'll see if Eric Paschal can follow up on a decent rookie year. But again, I thought that was a bit overrated in the context of somebody had to shoot. So, yeah, it's a little dark, right, when you look at that group and think, how are Steph and Draymond going to be able to lift that group up? And Pete, it's the kind of team, to go back to your Memphis point, that's not a great matchup, right, for the Warriors. Because the Warriors, all of a sudden, if those guys can just be kind of harassing Steph, then who are the rest of those guys are going to really be able to stop the momentum? So, yeah, man, I was a little surprised at first, but then I'm like, yeah, I can't have Golden State higher than really 11th on my list here.
Yeah, they were a mishmash before Klay went down, and kind of this, like, how do these young guys that have never played in an important game and these kind of journeyman players on the back end, how do they match with, you know, this most experienced trio in the NBA? And that was going to be a question before that. And now, to your point, right, you don't have a Draymond or Klay leading that 3-8 and what have you. And you've got James Wiseman, who's just coming into the NBA, who's got a ton
we'll
of talent,
see.
Right?
But I have no Pascal idea what Wiseman's really going to look like. Yeah,
right. Exactly. You know, like Eric Paschal was a really good second round pick for them last year, but under completely different circumstances. And those games are kind of hard to gauge. Like, how does that guy, when he is in more of a, you know, a Steph Draymond in that the actual Warriors team, what does that look like? And so, yeah, man, like I may even think 11's a little high for this team. I might put San Antonio ahead.
You know
of
what? Actually, that's 10. Yeah. So I could be persuaded quite easily.
Gotcha.
And so San Antonio would be Derek White, who I actually kind of like, DeJounte Murray. Mm-hmm. The idea of Murray has been better than the player the last couple of years. Jakob Poeltl, who's solid. Patty Mills, Rudy Gay, Trey Lyles. That's where you get into kind of some vets, right, that we know who they are. And then Lonnie Walker, still a bit of upside. And I stuck Trey Jones on there as a rookie. But, yeah, they're not super inspiring either in that context, but maybe a little bit more solid than Golden State. So, you know, yeah, Pete, I'm with you there. Well, let's move San Antonio up a spot. And then that just leaves Minnesota, Sacramento, and OKC. So OKC, I don't even think we need to spend much time on. I think they're the worst. They're intentionally bad, right? It's George Hill. There's two guys I do like, Darius Bazley and Lugans Dort. I think they've got a shot to be decent in a few years. But other than that, it's, you know, Tom Diallo and Mike Muscala. So, you know, and then Sacramento, Buddy Hield and Rashawn Holmes, Bielitsa, Harrison Barnes, Whiteside, Halliburton, Glenn Robinson. And Darius, Minnesota would be Rubio, Malik Beasley, the number one pick, Anthony Edwards, Juancho Hernangómez, Jake Layman, Josh Okogie, and Ed Davis. So out of those three, and feel free if you want to weigh in on Golden State or San Antonio, of course, anything that you like there, or is it kind of dark in thinking about how the rest of the upper half of the West looks?
I mean, well, things I like, Darius Bazley has a great name. Just a great name.
Yeah.
So let's move him up the rankings. In terms of the Warriors, I'm with you guys. I do think, though, Oubre and Wiggins, and to a certain extent, Wiseman, and then even Bazemore, those guys are going to benefit from the gravity of Steph and the general IQ of Steph and Draymond as playmakers and passers. And so I'm probably a bit higher on them within the context of their role and on this specific roster versus what they are as standalone individual talents. I think a guy like Oubre and a guy like Wiggins are going to be able to attack a fair amount of closeouts against scrambling defenses when teams are putting that pressure on Steph. And Steph is not a hold the ball, back dribble, escape dribble. No, no, no. It's my turn. It's my turn. It's my turn. He is I feel the pressure. Let's get it out of there. And let's let you guys play 4-on-3 or 3-on-2 on the backside. And we saw this with the Lakers all last season, right? When you give role players the chance to play 3-on-2 or 2-on-1, they often get much easier shots than what they would in a different situation. And so that's my sort of counter for
it's a great point.
For Golden State versus a team like the Spurs, right?
Yeah, Golden State's the only team that on in this part, really the bottom half, that has a legitimate superstar. And we saw with the Lakers that allows, makes life so much easier. Well,
this gets back to the original argument though, Darius, of like the exercise that we're doing right now is just sort of talent depth, right? But yeah. but you're absolutely right. If you're bringing Steph into it, that changes it. And just like, you know, maybe Towns, you know, with all the gravity that he has on offense, maybe he makes some of those Wolves guys better. I don't think there's, you know, I don't know if De'Aaron Fox is there yet for Sacramento. I know that DeRozan and Aldridge aren't for the Spurs, and we'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, it's a fair point that if you incorporating Steph, especially, and maybe even Draymond defensively, right, with the leadership he has there, those guys can be bumped up some.
And as far as the Spurs, I hear you on Murray in terms of like the idea of him has been better than in practice. What I will say though is that I don't think he played in the bubble last year, but if he did, it was very limited. The Spurs did not make the playoffs, right? But he was coming off of an ACL going into last season. And that's often, you know, like a year-long recovery. And for a guard who depends on athleticism, I think that the long layoff for him is going to help. I would not be surprised to see sort of a rejuvenated Murray if he's healthy and being able to sort of flash the potential that had the Spurs really high on him going into the season where he did hurt his knee.
Yeah, so he did play in the bubble. He played decently. Derek White, I thought, looked really good. Aldridge didn't play in the bubble. So they started that weird lineup where DeRozan was the four.
Power forward.
Yeah. And Pirtle was the five, and it like kind of worked. Now I say kind of worked because I think they went 5-3. But yeah, like they're interesting, but you know, I don't think we're, you know.
Yeah, like the rest of these teams though, like some interesting talents. Like I think that Buddy Hield is obviously one of those specialists that Pete talked about. I still like Ricky Rubio. I think that he's one of those floor raiser type of guys that can really organize you. Very similar to Rondo in that way, when he's operating at his peak level, he can be a problem and really help lift the floor of the other four players who are playing with him at any given time. But the top end sort of talent that exists in this part of the West is not high in general, and that's why they're projected to be out of the playoffs entirely, right? Like one reason is the West is so good, but these teams are also just not great right now. Now, will a guy like Anthony Edwards pop and some of these high-end draft picks, a Wiseman, those types of players, but we're not there yet. Right. This is all projection for young guys like that. So we'll just have to see.
All right. So kind of my concluding thought on that whole exercise is that you can make a case, I think, for whether it's the Clippers, the Blazers, the Nuggets, we all like to a close extent, Dallas or Utah. You can make a case, right, that all those teams are at least close. But I believe the strongest case is that the Lakers have the best of the 3-8/10 rosters. And you know, I think that that's not just backed up by evidence in terms of half of these guys started on good teams last year and or finished games. Darius and Pete, why don't you weigh in on that? And then if we could, we can go through the top twos real quick.
Well, I said this, right, Mike, before when you said like, hey, I think we should talk about this because I think it's a good thought exercise. And I said to you and Pete, look, I think we've gotten a pretty good look at the Lakers 3-8 or 3-10 guys because Anthony Davis and LeBron James have yet to play in a preseason game. And the level of just competence and on some levels, like real flash and showing the ability to compete at a fairly high level on both ends of the floor has been high for the Lakers at this point without a second of playing time for LeBron or AD. And so I think, Pete, that it bodes well for the discussion that we're having, that we're starting to see it already, right?
that 3-8 has more shot creation than any other team on this list. You can run a whole offense through Marc Gasol. You can run ball screens with Dennis Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell, or one or the other, right? Like we saw Trez eating alongside Quinn Cook, and Schroeder can do the same alongside a different big. So that ability to get an open look exists on that Lakers roster in a way it just doesn't on any of the others.
All right, so we can do this much more quickly, but just to fully underscore the point and then bring these things together, I put together a shorter list of the two players on each team that we didn't talk about. And there could be some discussion if you guys think, you know, for example, there's a player that belongs ahead of one of these two guys. But here's how I had it ranked. And again, stop me any place that you want to discuss. Lakers, LeBron and AD, number one. Clippers, two, with Kawhi and PG. I had Phoenix close to both Denver and Golden State, but I just really like both CP3 and Booker, so I had them third. Denver, Jokic and Murray, again, definitely accepting their being bumped. Steph and Draymond, a little bit of that is just respect for the pass. The group that I want to put higher is Dallas, because Luka, I think, has a chance to be MVP and is amazing, and I think you guys will convince me to put higher, but Porzingis is injured. And that's where they get penalized here. He's not only is he injured, he's not starting the season, but he's a major injury risk just in general. So that's Luka. I dropped Luka essentially because of that. Whereas if it were Luka and basically any of these other number twos, they'd probably be number two or number three. Then I had Harden and Wall, Lillard and McCollum. You could argue is above Harden and Wall. Mitchell Gobert, Towns Russell, Zion and Ingram, John Morant, Jaren Jackson. Fox and Bagley, and then DeRozan, Aldridge, and finally Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Al Horford. So Pete, first thing that stands out there, who do you want a little bit higher?
Give me Denver a little bit higher. Give me Denver ahead of Phoenix. And I would Lillard and McCollum ahead of Harden and Wall on that. What stands out for you, Darius?
I agree with Jokic and Murray. One of the things that I look at with this is any of these so these are top two guys, but are any of the number one guys capable of being like a top five player in the league? Right.
Yeah.
And LeBron and AD are both that. Kawhi is that, right. And Paul George is probably in that 8 to 12 to 15 range. Right.
Definitely in the regular season. Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely in the regular, definitely the regular season.
I kid.
Right. And then that's where, look, I'm starting to look at Steph Curry. I'm starting to look at Luka and Harden and Lillard, right? And so those guys, to me, I think raise and help lift the secondary guy. The Porzingis thing is a thing for me. And so I would, as much as I love Luka, Porzingis's question mark is tricky for me to navigate. I do expect Booker to make a big leap this year. And so if Booker ends up being like a better player than CP3 this year, then I think CP3 probably jumps in terms of like, is he a more impactful or better player than a lot of these second best player guys, right? Like obviously not as good as AD, probably not as good as Paul George, and probably around that Murray level, right? And so that probably keeps Phoenix in the upper half of this list to me. But I'm still looking at these top end guys like Steph and Dame. And look, like the Harden and Wall thing is the elephant in the room. Like Harden, last year's version of Harden, the guy who is all in, the guy who is trying to compete to make Houston the best team that they could possibly be. Like, he belongs in that list of guys too, who are in like that top 5 to 7 guys in the entire league, a perennial MVP candidate and whatnot. But we'll see how that goes.
I want to see it from Phoenix before I would probably drop Phoenix from third on this list to sixth, right? And bump up because of that superstar thing that you were talking about with Steph and Luka. And I think that, and the reason being is I think that Jokic plus Murray is better than CP3 plus Booker, even if they're very close, or even if you wanted to put CP3 and Booker ahead purely on talent wise, just because they fit together very well. Where they're, I think there's some degree of overlap between CP3 and Booker. And I know like they're both wonderful at what they do. I just, Mike, can you see any degree of like stepping on each other's toes in that duo?
Not, I mean, not a ton, just because. So CP3 was excellent alongside James Harden, who is even higher usage than Booker and in a different way. And like Booker can be a super quick assassin like scorer. You can run him off screens. You know, you can play him like Ray Allen on certain possessions, or you can clear out and let him ISO and let him run screen roll. I just think Booker is going to take another leap, and to have a player that actually demands attention on the other side of the floor, I think that's going to make Booker devastating. But sure. I'm still totally happy to drop them, you know, below Jokic and Murray, for example. And that's a nod to Jokic. Like if I had to rank those four players, I'd say Jokic number one, CP3 and Booker kind of depends on what you need, right? Are you looking for sort of overall skill set or like the kind of team leader, the driver of the team? So I probably tend to go CP3 slightly higher than Booker and then Murray. But Murray can take, if he can play like he did in the playoffs, you know, then he's got room to grow clearly as well. So they're close to me. And then, yeah, I probably want to bump Luka up some, but I think like the whole point here is that what we're not arguing about, what we're not debating is that LeBron and AD are number one. By a lot.
Right.
And if we wanted to have some argument or some discussion about where the Lakers ranked on the rest of the roster, I think we did that. And I sort of rest my case, you know? Mm-hmm. So that I think basically wraps up my feeling on all of this. It wraps up why they are the favorite. Does not guarantee anything. As we've seen, these things can turn so quickly. But when you combine a top two and they can make the rest of the group better, then you're in real business. And I think the Lakers have that going for them, the best in the Western Conference for this season.
Yeah, this is one of those things where this team projects to be so good in my eyes. I wonder if I have to catch myself about whether or not, like, am I being a homer? Am I like, am I not seeing things with clear enough eyes when it comes to this team? Because Pete, I think this team can be special. Like, not necessarily like one of the best teams ever special, but one of the most.
I think that's their ceiling. I think they're capable of that. I don't think that that's the median outcome. I don't think that happens 50 times out of 100, but this team absolutely has that type of ceiling. In fact, I think that's what they should be going for. I think that's the challenge, is that this could be one of the great all-time teams. I really believe
that. So let me ask you this before we wrap up. One of the things that Hollinger said in the rest of the pod where they were talking about the Lakers there when he was on with Nate Duncan was that one of the reasons why he knocked them down lower in terms of competitiveness during the regular season is the idea that they might load manage more, or they may, I'm just saying that to get Mike upset. Like I use those words specifically, but that they may rest their star players a little bit more, or that they may not be as motivated. So before I kick it to you guys to ask you about how real, because we've talked about this before, I was listening to the Sam Amick pod today, and he had on Tony Jones, who covers the Utah Jazz, I believe. And he had on Anthony Slater, who splits time between the Warriors and the Lakers in terms of his analysis. And Sam Amick made a really great point that I hadn't heard it framed this way before. So I wanted to bounce it off of you guys around this idea of letting your foot off the gas a little bit. And he made the point that LeBron's about to be 36. On the one hand, you might think, oh, well, he's older. Of course, he's going to like watch it and maybe let his foot off the gas and manage his body in a way where he can maybe coast a little bit more in order to be prepared for the postseason. But Amick was making the point like, no, man, like there's only so many years left that this guy has, and he knows it. He knows that he just signed this contract. He's got maybe three more years right? To be like, I'm going to chase as much success as I possibly can, because he's chasing ghosts, right? In terms of the all-time list. He's not chasing contemporaries. Yep. He's chasing these guys who have made their name in the league and whose legend status is cemented, right? And he argued that LeBron then is likely to push through and say, no, 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 no. This is my chance to go out there and really make it again and dominate and pad my level. So which side of that equation do you guys fall on? And the way that Amick framed that was a sort of a new idea to me. And what's your take on that?
The Lakers can dominate without LeBron expending a ton of energy, even in the regular season. And it's to the whole premise of this pod of 3 through 8. The list that Mike sent us for the Lakers is 3 through 11, because there's no way you could leave three of those guys off and you've got three more guys. And so the idea, if they do choose to sit a guy for a particular game, or if there's the inevitable bumps and bruises of a season, you've still got a dude that's between 9, 10, and 11 that is a top 8 rotation player on a high quality playoff team. And so that, combined with the fact that the shot creation is distributed much more evenly, or at least capable of being that, with Gasol's initiation, with Schroeder's addition, that LeBron can, you know, pick his spots. He can operate off the ball. We were talking last pod with Mark at the top of the key and AD and LeBron running those the flow offense sets and the wide pin downs off of that. Come on, man. And that's super easy. That's not, I've got to break a stationary defense down. LeBron can, like, so to me, the Lakers have the best 1-2, as Mike established. And I think they've got easily the best case for the best 3 through 8, much less 3 through 11. So when you got the best duo and you've got the best bench, Mike, like, I understand there's these external factors. It's a weird season and all that. But to me, this is a team, from a mentality standpoint, they should be looking to dominate, and they can without having to put their foot all the way down, on the gas.
Well, so the case is, we rest the case on paper in terms of the roster, in terms of how it fits together in our minds. They now have to go out and prove it. They have to prove mm-hmm. that Schroeder and Harrell can fit in a certain way, that, you know, Kuz keeps going in a certain direction, that the regular season means as much coming up a title, all that kind of stuff, sure. But the reason I think that the three of us are more confident that will happen is that we're more familiar with some of the personalities involved. You mentioned LeBron. Right. He's on a race against Michael Jordan in time, and just personal pride in the way that he carries himself. And he's also, I think, appreciative that he's here in LA now, where he enjoys living, and he's got a squad. Like, that's fun. That's energizing. AD, we haven't talked about much today. AD was unbelievable in the postseason in his 27, and Jared Dudley's gassing him up every practice. Yo, man, you got to be the MVP. Let's go. He's in his ear every day, pumping him up. Frank Vogel's every press conference is like, it's important for us to play as hard as the other, harder than the other team. It has to be about defensive intensity and effort. Schroeder is a dog. Harrell's a dog. Marc Gasol doesn't play any fools. He's not here for fun. You know, he's trying to win. Like, he doesn't play that. Wesley Matthews is that way. Keith is that way. Caruso is that way. So the roster is built like that.
Do you think Marc Gasol came to Los Angeles to play for the minimum, to sort of like ride out and just be like, I'm cool? Nah, man. Pete, you posted that clip of Gasol with the pivot and then the wraparound pass. And did you see the sort of like contempt on his face for like, look at me make this pass for like this layup? And as he's backpedaling, just sort of just like, you MFers don't even know what you're dealing with. Just that Marc Gasol, I know he was drafted by the Lakers, but grit and grind. It was him and Zach Randolph that personified that idea. Do you think he's going to come and not play hard?
Well, yeah, and he's got the bright lights on now. He was just in Toronto, you know, and it's a great crowd there, but it's not, you know, there aren't, the league at large isn't watching those games as much. And, you know, I think these guys all have pride. Like Mark wants people to know that, oh yeah, he's a dope basketball player. And guess what? If you play like this alongside LeBron and AD, especially, more and more people are going to notice, and that's going to add to your legacy as well. So I think the pushback that we're all probably feeling is it can't all be this good, and it's not all going to turn out like this. And it's not going to matter so much if they push for the greatest regular season that they can versus, but like the bottom line is it's all there. There's a ton of upside, and I don't buy into this notion that they're just not going to play hard, you know, because the last season ended 70 plus days ago. I think that there's too much pride, there's too much competitiveness, there's too much knowledge that these things don't last forever, and I think they're going to come out and compete. And if a guy rests here or there, that's fine. That's why it's nice to have 11 deep on the roster.
Yeah, our frame of reference in terms of, you know, greatest teams of all time that we're old enough to have seen of the Lakers, 2001 is probably at the top, with apologies to 87, which a lot of our listeners aren't quite old enough. But 2001, that's the playoff run we always talk about, right? What we don't talk about is they were like 21st or 23rd in defensive rating during the regular season. That's a team with Shaq on it, right? And Shaq, quite famously, I remember this version of Shaq, like during the regular season, you're not getting the same dude. It's not the same it wasn't the same environment with as much shot creation and guys who could fill in for a 60% type of Shaq. And so during the regular season, we weren't even the number one seed in the West of that greatest Lakers team of all time. We weren't a number one seed that year. But when they went to the playoffs, they had what they needed to, and they got that full version of Shaq. This isn't the same circumstance, right? Where not only do the Lakers have the two best stars, they've got a deep 3 through 11 and the mentality, right? And so as I will continue to say, this can go sideways in a bunch of different ways, but the Lakers have all of the ingredients, even under context, to not just go, you know, buy their time until the playoffs. I really think this is going to be a really good regular season team. I think that Hollinger's argument is insane, quite frankly, but we will see. It got Phoenix coming up tomorrow, and then another game on Friday, I believe, against them, and then we got the regular season coming up. We'll be back for our next episode on Friday, but until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale wants to turn, he's double team, just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy, tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly, Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires again, and the Lakers win the game! The Lakers win the game!
Rebound is Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance,
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe. Hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.